minutes ago. I'm looking real good in my passport photo. Oh, no.
Amateur Traveler, episode 787. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about tide pools and Columbus, beaches and turtles, rum and mama wanna, as we go to the U.S. Virgin Islands and the island of St. Croix. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about St. Croix. I'd like to welcome to the show Kat Roy and Phil Schantz from the StayingAfloatBlog.com, who've come to talk to us about the island of St. Croix. Kat and Phil, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
And what's your connection with St. Croix?
So I've always been interested in the Virgin Islands. I've traveled previously with friends to St. John Island. Phil's actually never been. And he really enjoys the Caribbean and places to go snorkeling. Ultimately, we actually decided on St. Croix. And we were motivated, as most budget travelers are, through some of our points that we had at the time, which was Spirit Airlines. Mm-hmm. And one of the sort of connecting flights that were available in our point range was from Myrtle Beach, which was our home base at the time, and St. Croix. So that was ultimately how we ended up going there. But also we were really interested in the fact that if you do any research on the island itself, there was a lack of, it almost seemed like, information on St. Croix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly St. John's and St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands get more tourism than St. Croix does.
Exactly.
I have not been there. I have been to the other two, so I'm one of those people.
So that was a success as well. We do like to try and find some off-the-beaten-path destinations when we can. So that was ultimately how we ended up on St. Croix.
Yeah, the only thing that concerned me there is that you had a sort of connecting flight. A sort of connecting flight sounds bad, but other than that, sounds good. And why should someone go to St. Croix?
So St. Croix is definitely a outdoorsy destination, I would say.
Yep, very tropical, Jurassic-like destination. Ecotourism is a big part of it. Very diverse landscape from cactus desert-like on the east side to tropical rainforest on the west.
And it's one of the Caribbean islands that you can visit from the U.S. without a passport, which I think is quite appealing to a lot of people. As you mentioned, there is a short layover, connecting flight to get there. But for the most part, it's a pretty quick trip as well.
Excellent.
Our connecting flight was out of Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm. But we stayed on the plane, so it wasn't a switch off or anything, specifically because it was one of Spirit Airlines' routes. But it's a really neat destination, and you've seen if you've been to St. Thomas or St. John, mm-hmm. a lot of history there. Sort of the structures and the buildings speak very much to sort of the 1800s. Still, you can see the buildings and the condition that they were in when the European settlers started to sort of take over back in those times. So it's almost a bit of a trip back in time as well.
Okay. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Well, we did end up traveling down for 8 days, so 7 nights. It is a small island. You can drive around it in a day. It's about 25 miles across and 8 miles wide. But with renting a vehicle and having access to the island, there are a lot of different places to stop, and you can easily fill 8 days with. So the first day that we arrived in St. Croix, we picked up our rental car. The rental car that they recommend for St. Croix is a four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm. Which is highly recommended. Our Airbnb host, every time that we asked him about information on the island, he kept going back to a 4x4 rental car because the roadways and just the landscape in general is more rugged than anybody in America would see on a regular basis.
The roads themselves range from asphalt to dirt to semi-visible tire tracks to completely grass covered.
Okay.
It's one thing to look at a map and you see the roads and you think, okay, I got a grasp on exactly what the layout of St. Croix is, but the amount of variability in the roads is one of the more surprising aspects, I think. And they also drive on the left, which is unique, but also what they do, I believe, on St. John, possibly St. Thomas.
I haven't driven on either of those, and I am surprised. Of course, their nearest neighbor is the British Virgin Islands, but I did not remember that.
But it's funny because you drive within the vehicle, you're driving on the left as you would in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
but you're actually also driving in the left lane. So that was a really unique experience as well.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because it wasn't a British possession. It was a Danish possession that the U.S. bought. So I'm a little puzzled why they drive on the left, but okay.
we were looking into it. I think it was, it kind of went back and forth between the Danes and the English and the French. Ultimately ended up being the Danes that owned it. So mm-hmm. I'm not, I guess, sure maybe one of the driving on the left of something just kind of stuck. But
St. Croix is obviously not a Danish name. It's a Spanish name, Holy Cross. So it's had a little mixture in terms of the naming of it. But when you go to the capital, Frederiksted, you got a good Danish name there.
Yes. 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 Christian Verne is the name of the fort.
Right.
On the east end. So definitely some Dutch influence there.
Danish.
And so on that first day, we asked one of the folks at the rental car agency what they recommended. We had just gotten off. It was about lunchtime. And they absolutely swore hands down that we needed to go to Lorraine Chicken Shack for lunch, which is one of the roasted chicken locations that apparently everyone goes to. And if you look it up online, places to eat on St. Croix, it's one of the top rated ones. Absolutely 100% delicious.
We ended up going there more than once.
And this sounds like a usual white tablecloth fancy dining place?
Absolutely, 100%. Smoke billowing out the chimney. Half of the building, like, it's all open air. Half the building is kind of a sit-down patio furniture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like plastic chairs, plastic tables, plastic tablecloths. Your plates are the styrofoam blocks with the plastic cutlery.
And the other half's a bar. And again, just open-aired. Aromas are incredible. Food is incredible. It's a roasted jerk rub that they use. Again, just melt in your mouth.
With some of the traditional sides. They have some traditional barbecue sides, I guess. Beans. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that was our first stop. It really got us motivated for the trip because everything is so far so good. So we actually, after we had filled our stomachs after the flight, we decided to visit the Captain Morgan Distillery. So there's a couple distillery breweries on the island, but the two really popular ones are Captain Morgan and Cruisin' Rum. And so Captain Morgan was the one we decided to go to the first day. We actually really lucked out, I guess, also with season specifically, because we visited on the shoulder season, essentially. It was right before the end of hurricane season. So it was really quiet on the island, and we ended up actually getting what I would consider a private tour, because it was just the two of us.
Yeah. And so what month was that? You're talking about October?
October, okay. Yes. End of October, beginning of November. And I think that that has a lot to do with the very, well, almost we felt it was an exclusive trip for us, because the amount of times that we had a beach to ourselves, or we were one of very few people at a restaurant.
Even going to the local attractions, people were very sparse. It was the very end of rainy season, and mm-hmm. we got lucky with the weather and just the lack of tourists.
Okay. Captain Morgan, I assume, is all about the tasting.
It is, yes. I mean, it's interesting, of course, to get a tour of the property.
Sure.
Sort of a behind the scenes and see all the large stills that they use and some of the rum barrels, or the used barrels, rather, that they use to age the rum. But then they have a bar at the end of the tour, and essentially you get your choice of samples from any of the Captain Rum / Parrot Bay products, because they're under the same hat.
Got it. And it looks like it is not open every day of the week, Monday through Friday.
I know we were doing, trying to do a bit of research for the podcast to be prepared with some of the openings and closings. But I think it's kind of changing on a daily basis, obviously, because of the pandemic. So,
right.
I apologize that we don't have more information on
that. That's okay. This is going to be true for this episode, as with all episodes, especially in this time of rapid transition, is double check some of the openings and closings. Even if we tell you on the podcast what time things are available, you're going to want to double check, because things always change, and now so even more.
Absolutely. Now it's a good thing to preface. Starting on my blog post with a disclaimer. And so after the Captain Morgan Distillery tour, we actually ended up checking into our Airbnb. As we mentioned previously, we're more of the budget type travelers. Mm-hmm. We ended up finding a really awesome Airbnb for less than $50 a night.
Oh, wow.
We actually paid $39 a night.
At the time, but they asked.
It's $49 a night now.
So we got lucky. They just started offering the Airbnb. And I think that's one of the kind of side tips with Airbnb, is if you can find a newer account, they usually offer a deal until they get their first few reviews.
Sure. Yeah, we've done that.
And so we just lucked out time-wise that that was the deal that we ended up with. Mind you, it was a studio, the futon. It wasn't anything crazy fancy, but the location itself was pretty incredible. It was one of the highest points on the island. And so waking up and walking out of the studio apartment in the morning, you had a beautiful view of, and it was on the north side, and you could actually see the landscape towards the south side, including the ocean on the south side. And if you look to the east, you got a really beautiful view of Buck Island, which is one of the treasures on the island there.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to talk more about Buck Island, I think, in the future. So we'll get to there. Okay.
And then
to the north, you can see St. John and
St. Thomas
on a nice day. And they're roughly about 40 miles north, I believe.
Okay.
And then same to the west, you're looking at Mount Range.
Yeah. So it was a really beautiful location, I'd say, as far as scenery goes. It was a little treacherous to get to. We can appreciate where our Airbnb host recommended the 4x4 drive. I think we were going up and down hills that had to have been
5 or 10 miles an hour. It was very slow.
Very.
And right off the bat, we were very pleased that we listened to his recommendation.
Yeah. And as we went on during the week exploring other destinations. So.
Okay.
And so that night, we actually just went out around and explored downtown Christiansted, because there's a bit of a nightlife there as well. A lot of bars. One of the things we'll talk to a little more as the discussion goes on is Mama Juana, which is one of the local / Caribbean alcohols that is sort of like a moonshine, almost a local moonshine. And all the different bars have their own versions. So that was one of the really neat things to explore on the island as well, was sort of bar hopping and tasting the different variations of Mama Juana.
And I know nothing about this. So what does it taste like?
So it is a combination of broken up roots and herbs and rum, wine, and honey that is soaked.
Okay. That is hard to picture what that's going to taste like.
And it is. And the thing is, depending on the individual that's crafting it, what's in it, each one is different. Like, we never tasted one that was the same, and even future batches are going to be different because flavors are taken out of what they're using each time that it's being made. So and then at a certain point they start over and they make a new batch and they make it in large quantities.
We went to the one bar, actually on our second day, it was called Spratnet, and it was a gentleman that owned the bar, and he made his own version. He called it Papa Juana, because you only ever hear Mama Juana as the name of the drink itself. So it might be disguised under a different name. The one bar we went to, one of the bars we went to, is called the Naughty Bar. They called it Naughty Juana.
Yeah.
So there's different ways that they name it as well. But essentially, it's a combination of bark and herbs soaked in various combinations of rum, wine, and honey.
And you say bark, I'm thinking like sarsaparilla kind of bark.
So we can't find it anywhere. We've done a lot of research because we wanted to make it at home. You can buy like a make at home kit that comes with the bark on Amazon, but it doesn't actually tell you what the wood is in the times that we looked into it. And that's supposed to be part of the sort of secrecy of the Mama Juana, is they never actually share what bark or roots or herbs that they're using. And that's why it's so different from one producer to the next.
Hmm. Okay.
So definitely recommend it. Any opportunity that you have, if you partake in adult beverages, any opportunity that you have while on St. Croix to
any Caribbean
sample, or, well, I suppose traditionally in the Dominican Republic, but it's very, very present in St. Croix, I would say.
Yeah.
And so that was it. We just sort of went out and did a bit of bar hopping downtown Christiansted. We, in discussion with our Airbnb host, questions sort of nightlife and safety and all that kind of stuff. That's something that people are concerned about, understandably, different parts of the Caribbean. But for the most part, it was state of the lit streets, don't wander off on your own. I mean, very basic safety rules that we felt safe enough wandering around, and we didn't have any issues at any time on the island.
Okay.
So on day two, the first thing that we did, actually, one of our favorite things to do when we go on vacations is explore the local grocery store and just try and take in all the different types of food that they offer. And then we have some snacks throughout the week, because we usually do some type of, with a car rental, we'll do like a road trip in the different destinations that we go. So we'll have snacks along the way. And then just to try some of the local culture. Phil ended up finding one of his favorite candies to this day.
Absolutely. Have you ever heard of tamarind?
Tamarind?
Yes.
The spice.
They're kind of like beans.
So it's a bean that is covered, or a seed that is covered with the meat.
Mm-hmm.
is very sweet and sour at the same time. But when it's processed, they soak it in sugar and it becomes a very...
It's almost like nature's Sour Patch Kids.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay.
So they had in the store in candy form, but also now we get them here in our grocery stores locally in North Carolina. You can buy the actual bean pods and you just pull the beans out and chew on them and suck on them. So they are pretty widely available, the fruit itself. But specifically at the grocery store, they had this type of candy called Tamarindo Balls, which Phil was very excited to buy several of and bring home. We always, our souvenirs are always usually food or drink consumables. We'd rather that and be able to sort of draw out the experience than just have a little knickknack sitting on the shelf.
You don't do the little spoons then?
Right. Actually, every his mother collects the spoons, so we always bring those back as well.
There we go.
But then so also exploring the local grocery store, exploring the local farmers markets as well. The fruit, depending on the season that you'll find on St. Croix, includes soursop, breadfruit, guava, passion fruit, carambola, which is starfruit, papaya, coconut. So all those tropical fruits that come to mind when you think of the Caribbean are all widely available, again, depending on the season on the island. So we just like to go pick some of those up to bring with us for the week.
Well, and I'm picturing St. Croix being more agricultural than St. Thomas and St. John. Am I on the right track? More fields?
Yes. Yeah. So certainly, traditionally, it was the biggest sugarcane producer in the Caribbean. That's why it has such a rich rum history. But also since then, it's gone towards, you'll see a lot of farms on the islands. They have some, all of those tropical fruits, plantains, drive by a lot of farm patches, I guess, with all the trees where they're growing all that. And the farmer's market is actually quite large there as well. We didn't get a chance to make it, but it came highly recommended by quite a few folks. So it's less touristy, I would say, than the other two islands. But there's something about that to appreciate as well, because it just almost gives you more of a chance to, seems more chill, I would say.
Sure.
After the grocery store, went back to the Airbnb, dropped everything off. We headed out to Cane Bay. It was about a 10-minute drive to Cane Bay. You come out by the Saltwater Reserve, and it's basically a coastal road that takes you to the beach. And again, because one of our reasons for going to St. Croix was to snorkel, one of the best things that you can do when you first get to a destination that you are not familiar with is go talk to a local dive shop. Find out conditions, currents, all those things that you need to know when you're out in the open ocean that tourists or the unexperienced wouldn't.
I mean, and also they're good opportunities to book tours if you're not the type of person. So Phil and I do a lot of snorkeling.
Yeah, we haven't said what you do for a living, so.
No, so we're marine scientists by trade. So we definitely have a very deep-seated passion for the ocean. So we do spend a lot of time in the water. And so part of the draw to the Caribbean, of course, is snorkeling. So we actually went to St. Croix, and we usually do when we go to the Caribbean, bring our own snorkeling gear for various reasons. If you are an avid snorkeler, ultimately it does save you money. You don't have to rent the equipment every time you go somewhere. But also, you know, it's going to fit, and you're not limited to a time frame as to when you need to return it. So that's sort of what we gravitate to when we're snorkel traveling. But it is a good opportunity with going to the dive shops that you can ask the questions that you need. What are the tides? As Phil mentioned, the conditions, things you need to take into consideration when it comes to safety, maybe understanding the local wildlife. Are you going to see sharks versus are you going to see dolphins, different parts of the island? And so we just wanted to go into one of the shops and sort of ask those questions to make sure that we were making the right decisions on the right days.
And to our surprise, they had a hand-drawn map that had very clear labels for parking, places to go in, and local drinks close by.
Which dive shop was this that was so helpful?
The Cane Bay dive shop, actually.
Got it. Okay.
It's right across the water
from the beach. Cane Bay Beach.
So Cane Bay, the big attraction with Cane Bay is that it has what is called the wall.
Okay.
And it's essentially within a 200-yard swim of the beach. It's essentially a drop-off into the Puerto Rico Trench, so about 3,200 feet. So that's more of a diving location if you're into scuba diving. That's the biggest feature on the island that draws people in. But leading up to sort of that edge of the trench, it goes out to about 40 feet in depth. And the really neat thing about with us snorkeling, so we weren't actually going down to the bottom, but floating at the surface, you can see the Nature Conservancy has a Elkhorn and Staghorn Coral Nursery.
Okay.
Specifically in Cane Bay. And so Elkhorn and Staghorn are known to be one of the big protectors of the coral reefs in the Caribbean. I mean, there's been a lot of destruction over the years between all the hurricanes and the, whether you want to talk about it or not, changes in climate, been a lot of impacts on the coral reefs in the Caribbean. And so the Nature Conservancy is making an effort to restock them, essentially, to try and protect the islands. And so it's really neat to be able to see the nursery where they're growing all of those corals within a short snorkel from the beach. So we spent quite a bit of time there. Some of the creatures that we saw some stingrays, octopus, different types of worms, all of the different tropical fish. I could go on. The very stereotypical tropical fish that you see in the Caribbean. So that was our first exposure to snorkeling on the island, and it was really, really great.
And this is just off the beach.
Yeah, we walked in, swam out, and everything was completely free.
Excellent.
Again, if you feel comfortable in the water enough to explore on your own, it is doable, and there's a lot of safe, sheltered beaches to be able to snorkel from.
But they also do offer
guided tours.
Yeah, guided tours for snorkeling and diving.
And I get the feeling we're going to talk about one later on.
So that was pretty much day two from our trip. We ended up just going back to the Airbnb and sort of snacking. We were pretty exhausted after that first snorkel. So on the third day, we went to downtown Christiansted. There are two main cities on the island of St. Croix. Christiansted is on the east end and Frederiksted is on the west end. Frederiksted is the town that we'll go into in a little more detail. We visited a couple days later, but essentially downtown Christiansted has a boardwalk, which is really well known. There's a live webcam that you can actually visit online. You'll see people walking along the boardwalk, but it's this really pretty boardwalk that overlooks the bay there. And there's some restaurants, bars, different little shops leading up into the main downtown area, where again, there's a lot of restaurants, bars, shops, and there's a fort, as I mentioned previously, located on the easternmost part of town. And you can visit the inside of the fort, do tours of the fort. It's a National Historic Site. It's actually a 7-acre lot, which is essentially dedicated to the Danish life of the 1700s. So it's a really neat opportunity, as we mentioned previously, to sort of immerse yourself in the history of the islands, going all the way back to that Danish sort of way of life.
And when we say that Danish way of life, I'm picturing more sugar mills and plantation history than a place to get Eboleskiver or something like that.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Because of the Danish lifestyle and sort of traditions on the island, you almost get a glimpse into, like you said, the plantations. It's sort of the luxury, if you will, royalty of back in the day.
As long as you weren't the slave who was building everything.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. So, which a significant amount of the population at the time when all the sugar mills were active on the island were slaves. So.
Yep.
So it's really interesting to learn the history there. And the inhabitants of the island have obviously embraced the history of the island. There's just a really great presentation of an acceptance of sort of how it all went down.
And what happened.
Yeah. And so from the boardwalk, you can actually head over to Protestant Cay, which is a little island just north of Christiansted downtown. And it's a $5 ferry ride to get over to the island. And there's a hotel on the island. So we had been recommended that it was a good spot to maybe find some sea turtles when we were exploring and snorkeling. So the island itself, which mostly pretty much just holds up the hotel, we ended up snorkeling the perimeter of it in about an hour. And same, we got to see some really neat wildlife there. We encountered a barracuda.
He kind of followed us around for a little bit.
They're always a little creepy.
Yeah, had a standoff with an angelfish.
A tiny little juvenile angelfish got all up in Phil's face and was trying to ward off his territory. It was pretty entertaining. He was a tough little fish.
He was.
I'd be more intimidated by the barracuda.
Right, no, definitely. And that's a really neat location to dive because you can see some abandoned cannons under the water. So because it's so near in proximity to the fort, and there's some really historic pieces in the water when you're doing that sort of explorative snorkel. So we hung out on the beach there for the afternoon, and then we ended up heading back over on the ferry back into town, walking around for dinner and exploring some of the restaurants there, a couple bars. One of the locations that we ate downtown was called 40 Eats and Drinks, which is on Strand Street. And it's one of the locations that offers Mutiny Island Vodka, which we actually have sort of a soft spot for. We discovered while we were doing some of our research for St. Croix that it was one of the first.
The first
red fruit distilled spirit. So it's called Mutiny Island Vodka, and they actually have a distillery. It's called Scion Farm Distillery there now.
And I'm sorry, what? I missed the fruit name.
No worries. Breadfruit.
Breadfruit, huh?
Yes. So they were in the process, essentially, when we visited in 2018, of building the distillery. So at the time, they were actually producing it in Chesapeake Bay in Virginia. And so we got hooked up with one of the social media managers, and I reached out and I said, hey, just learning about Mutiny Vodka, we'd be really interested in doing a tasting and advertising Mutiny brand Island Vodka on our blog. And so they took us up on it, and we ended up having dinner at what at the time was the one of the restaurants that was offering it in lieu of the distillery that they were in the process of building. And so they've toured the world. There's an annual breadfruit
conference
in Hawaii every year.
Of course there is. Although my invitation seems to have gotten lost again. So
ours too.
And so Mutiny has won a lot of awards over the last few years for its originality. And so, as I mentioned, now there's the actual distillery called Scion Farm Distillery, where you can sample Mutiny in person on St. Croix. But we haven't had a chance to visit the distillery because it hadn't been opened yet.
Got it.
So downtown, Christian said, as I mentioned, we sort of wandered around in the evenings, felt really comfortable, tried some different local foods, and visited a couple of the bars, and then called it a night on our third day.
And in terms of local foods, any particular dish that stood out that you'd go back to St. Croix just for that?
So potfish.
Okay.
Potfish. That was my favorite.
And it's something that you see quite frequently in the Caribbean. It's the catch of the day.
It's a style of cooking rather than a particular variety of fish.
No. So asking, what type of fish is this, just for my own curiosity?
Mm-hmm.
She says, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? And she said, it's the fish. It's whatever fish swims into the pot that day.
Okay.
It's a type of cooking.
Yes. So, yes.
Fish pots like lobster traps, it says. Oh, interesting. Okay. Yep.
So there's various fish that it could be. Red snapper, common parrotfish, sometimes they said, like a panfish. Pan-sized fish.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll get it all cleaned up, put some spices on it, stuff it with some lemon and herbs, and then grill it up and bring it out to your table.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's one of the really popular dishes on the islands. They are also known for Johnny cakes.
Okay.
So similar to a, almost like a patty. So it's like a dough.
Mm-hmm.
Or a pate, they call them, just like a dough stuffed with various either types of meats or fruits, or like a hand pie, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
Now, the Johnny cakes that I'm familiar with are the southern cornmeal style. Is this the same or similar? Those are usually not stuffed, though. Nope. Caribbean Johnny cakes is more of a pita, almost.
Less corn.
Yep. Okay.
So corn-like, more like a bread, I guess.
Okay.
Plantains you find frequently on the menu. Rice and beans. Red pea soup is another popular dish.
Okay.
St. Croix. Conch is a popular seafood locally.
Mm-hmm.
Wahoo is another type of fish that you will see on the menus. Saltfish, sort of a highly salted fish,
mm-hmm,
mixed in with some different seasonings. And then due to the sugar/rum nature or history of the islands, rum cake is also a very widespread dessert that's available.
I can get behind that. Okay.
Fungi is another one of the popular dishes. It's sort of more like a side.
Okay.
Similar to a paella. So it is ground cornmeal mixed in with some seasonings and some diced up vegetables. So you did see that on some of the menus as well.
Okay. The African influence, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that pretty much wrapped up our third day on the island.
The fourth day was one of my favorite places on the island. We wrapped up early on day three for the specific reason that we were going to catch the first sunrise in the United States. So the easternmost of St. Croix is called Point Udall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first sunrise in the United States. Oh, I'm not sure how tall the cliff is, but it's like an over like a scenic view. They have a
millennial monument
that was set up right there. And we just set up chairs, like, again, went out in the dark in the morning and set up chairs to catch the sunrise. And you have, again, a full panoramic view of just nothing but ocean. And then it's just mountain landscape behind you. So just a fantastic start to a day.
Yeah, the elevation on the island, the highest elevation is about 200 meters. So nothing crazy for mountains. But if you can get up on one of those hills, you got a pretty good vantage point.
Okay. Although I will have to say that I believe Wake Island is actually the first place that the sun shines in the U.S. because it's the other side of the international dateline. So.
Yeah. All right. Well,
but I could certainly believe that the tourism board advertises it as the first place that the sun shines. And it's one of those things that one can debate whether it's Cadillac Mountain or Wake Island or St. Croix. But in any case, a good place to watch the sunrise.
We'll have, yes, exactly. And it was neat, too, because you could see the fishing boats going out for the day. So they'll be, of course, bringing in the catch that you'll find in the restaurants that night. So just to really, you know, you get to see some of the local folks running their laps. That's one of the points that folks run out to. So just one of those opportunities to just kind of be part of the island community, I guess, and kind of just watch the island community do its thing mm-hmm. at the early hours.
Very cool.
And then the neat thing about that was, so if you looked from looking out east towards the sunrise, if you look to the south, the time of year also that we went, so end of October, beginning of November, there are still a lot of turtle, sea turtle tracks left around on the beaches because all of the nests have just recently wrapped up. And so the island itself is a very popular spot for sea turtles. The different species that arrive there include leatherback sea turtles, green sea turtles, and hawksbill sea turtles. So there's a really dedicated program on the island of St. Croix for the turtles, just because they do arrive on an annual basis and nest. And so for the year of 2021, the Sea Turtle Project actually counted 98 leatherback nests, 1,075 green turtle nests, and 230 hawksbill nests on the island, which is pretty incredible.
For such a small island, that is
high density. And so it was neat to look over the beaches and see all of the markings in the sand. But if you go down to the beaches, you actually can also see sort of the nests. Once all of the eggs have hatched, the sand sort of caves in where the nest was. And so you can see the pre-existing nests. You can see the remnants of eggshells all over the beach. So it's really, again, neat time of year to go and sort of see the new life for the aftermath of the new life that has recently been released into the ocean. And they have a really good volunteer program as well that people can get involved with if they do head to the island throughout the year. The program that they have, they respect the wildlife very deeply. And I think that was one of the other really appealing things about the island. Again, in that sort of ecotourism aspect, if you're an outdoorsy type person and you really value nature, it's very evident on the island that the inhabitants take that seriously as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up from a short walk from Point Udall. There's another one of the recommended snorkeling spots, which is Isaac Bay. And so that's a bit of a hike through
a couple miles
through the short hills. But again, with being up that time of the day, we ended up being on the beach. We were the first people on the beach. So we were able to do some snorkeling around and just hanging out in the water, doing our own thing without having to worry about.
That one was nice because it had a westward current. So we could basically just get in the water and just kind of flow with the current basically right along the shore. I'm not even sure how far down the beach we floated, a few miles. We got to a point where it got a little rocky. There was a bunch of urchins.
And I had to run into the urchin.
Unfortunately, Catherine had to run into the urchin.
Uh-oh.
She lost.
And I think we're talking about a sea urchin rather than a sea local urchin.
So again, I mean, keeping safety in mind, I wouldn't say professional snorkelers, but we do it quite regularly, and it's easy to have those minor run-ins as well. So again, just keeping safety in mind. I say run-in with an urchin. I ended up with 3 spines in my finger. It wasn't the end of the world, but at the time it was less than favorable, I guess.
Not the highlight of your day.
No, not at all. So that was when we got out of the water. So we ended up walking back to the car.
That was the first time that we crossed paths with another couple. So we basically had the whole morning, the snorkel, sitting on the beach. Everything was private. And again, one of the highlights.
And one of the other really neat things about St. Croix is, and I don't think you really see it mentioned anywhere, but once you start talking to folks on the island, all of the beaches on the island are public access.
I was wondering that when you were talking about Protestant Cay being right there by the hotel, that the laws there are similar to Hawaii, where everything is public access. That's great.
Yes. That was really awesome. Because you could just drive along and stop at any beach.
Mm-hmm.
Or keep walking along the beach as long as you wanted without worrying about trespassing on someone's property. So that was a really great aspect of it as well.
Mm-hmm. And a nice thing that you can go, like, the resorts, you can even go in and sit on the resort beaches.
Right, yeah.
It's a very unique experience.
Yeah, I wish we had that rule here. I've always enjoyed it in Hawaii.
And so then we ended up going to Cheeseburgers in Paradise, which was sort of an American-themed restaurant. I say American. Yes, St. Croix is part of the U.S., but it was less Caribbean food, more sort of genuine American food, burgers and fries, that sort of thing. But I think we were the only people in the restaurant there as well. Granted, we were there early for lunch, but those are the opportunities that are nice because the waitress will stand around and talk to you a little longer and sort of see how your trip's going and give you other recommendations, which she had some really good ones for the West End, the woman that was as a server. So
got it.
And then she actually recommended that we essentially cross the road from Cheeseburgers, which was called Chenet Bay. And we ended up spending the afternoon just laying on the beach there because we'd been doing a lot of snorkeling. We hadn't really been spending much time just chilling on the beach. And we knew that it was some weather coming in. And when we got into the water, the visibility wasn't all that great. So we actually just ended up lounging that afternoon. And then that evening for dinner, we went to the Blues Backyard Barbecue and Grill, which was a really nice, again, sort of American style barbecue joint with picnic tables outside and a big stage. There was a Grateful Dead cover band playing that night. So they get really, really good entertainment.
Good vibes there.
Yeah, really, really, really great place for entertainment and food.
Well, and we probably should say that one advantage to a place like St. Croix in the times that we are is that so many of your dining things are going to be outside anyway.
Yeah, outside and open air. I think that's exactly. That's a big part of Caribbean living.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of anywhere we ate indoors.
I don't think we did. No. I didn't. We didn't even have air conditioning at our Airbnb, and it wasn't uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Even how warm it gets during the day, the nights, the breeze, just everything is very comfortable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so our fifth day was the day that we did the tide pools.
Yeah,
I know, Chris, you're very excited about this part.
Well, it's just we have to explain to the listeners what's going on here. But when Kat was pitching the show, I didn't say yes right away. Sometimes there's negotiation that goes on to see whether there's enough content. And my question was just, if you're not a marine biologist, was a whole day looking at tide pools going to be how I would spend my time? And perhaps not. But where did you go?
So the tide pools, for parking for them, you actually drive into the Carambola Resort.
Okay.
Which is the big Marriott luxury resort on the island.
Okay.
And they got a little parking pad for you, and it's about a 2.5 mile hike, which it's a fairly simple hike. There's a little up and down, and it's through the rainforest, which makes it extra cool. You hike through. You come out to an opening on the beach.
A really pretty pebble.
And it's all little pebbles. So with each wave breaking, you hear the rocks kind of shuffling up the beach and then sliding back down the beach.
Which is unique from any of the other beaches on the island.
Hmm.
The rest are all sand, so that was kind of neat.
Yeah, it's all white sand beach, and then this is a pebble beach.
And this is Anali Bay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get over to the tide pools, you actually have to hike a little bit on the rocks, which I had no problem with, but Kat ended up being too excited and she ended up scuffing her knee. So we got there, we had a little first aid to do, but we spent several hours. A
couple hours, yeah.
And
just hanging out in the tide pools. It's really neat because the tide pools are essentially surrounded by rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what makes it, they're high rocks. It's not like when you think tide pools, do you think like California tide pools where the tide leaves and there's these tiny little
right.
pools that are left behind. But these are really large, almost like swimming pools
mm-hmm.
that are constantly flushed by the waves that are coming in. So the water is regularly refreshed. And if a big enough wave comes in, depending on the day that you're there, they break over the rocks and essentially cause waterfalls coming into the pools.
Hmm.
So visually, it's just a really stunning spot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple pools that are, you need to climb some rocks to access, but for the most part, they're easy to get to and safe. And that's where a lot of the people stop, and that's where they'll hang out. But you can, and speaking to one of the locals, sort of keep going if you're feeling ambitious and in a sort of rock climbing mode. Make your way a little further west along the coast, and there's some more private tide pools. But they are like hot tub. They're not hot springs, water temperature-wise, but hot tub-sized pools. Okay. Where you can just chill in and watch the ocean move by. So that was really unique. And then they do have some different fish and little creatures unique from what you'll see in the coral reefs, just because it's a completely different habitat.
Mm-hmm.
So then you make the 2.5 mile hike back to your car.
And we ended up walking through the resort. They were calling for rain that day. So we ended up walking through the resort and getting caught in a monsoon. To put it and that was about the end of that for the tide pools.
Got back into the car. It was a little wet. Yeah. So we were hoping to dry off along the way, but it is what it is. We had a Jeep also, I think, is valuable. Well, we were talking about the 4x4 drive. But if you're planning to spend some time in the water, the Jeeps are nice just because it's not a lot of fabric. Mm-hmm. You don't really worry so much about drying out in between adventures, if you will. You can put all your wet stuff on the ground because there's no, it's all plastic and mats. It's not fabric.
Mm-hmm.
So then from there, we ended up venturing west again because it was a little drizzly. So we just figured we'd do some exploring in the car. And some of the roads heading west are pretty, it's almost like you're in Jurassic Park. You're almost waiting for a dinosaur to sort of poke its head out of the bush. Just because it's so thick and it's like hang, so those really long vines that hang down on the road. Mm-hmm. And you see wild fruit all along the roads, papaya, carambola, mangoes. We saw the whole drive. So it's just a really, I mean, similar to, I guess, we've never been to Hawaii, but what I picture parts of Hawaii looking like when people explain it. So that was really neat. And that was, again, sort of off the beaten path, sort of in the heart of the islands. But at that point, we ended up continuing and making our way all the way to the West Coast and exploring Frederiksted.
Mm-hmm.
So Frederiksted is the second big city, quote unquote, on the island. Again, it's just a few blocks, essentially, of restaurants, stores, and bars. But Frederiksted is popular because it's where the cruise ships come in. It's got a really big pier that was put in a few years ago.
Specifically for the cruise ships.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they'll make their stop if you're on the cruise line that's doing St. Croix as a stop. And so the shops there are very tourist catered, I guess you could say. There's a dive shop on that end as well. And the pier, actually, in the off season, when you don't need to be concerned about the ships, also serves as a really excellent snorkeling spot. The piers, as nature goes, sort of
does a reef.
Right. And build up their own sort of population of animals and wildlife, that sort of thing. So that was actually mm-hmm. where we got to see a hawksbill turtle in the wild, in the water, just snorkeling along the pier. There was a sea turtle that was hanging out around the picking little bits off the posts, having an afternoon snack. Got to see some eels there, some squid.
Huge schools of fish.
Really, really, really impressive schools of fish. There's also folks fishing in the area, so that's a good thing to be aware of. If you are planning a snorkel, just get your eyes on some of the fishermen. It is a popular snorkeling spot, so it's one of those places where everybody just needs to communicate and make sure, okay, you're fishing over here with your line, and I'm going to snorkel over here. So it's not that it's abnormal. You just need to make sure that, again, you're making eye contact with the folks that are fishing. Again, because it's such an abundant spot. I mean, somewhere where people are fishing, there's going to be fish. And it's really cool to see life, different tropical fish from underwater. So, and then that afternoon, we did lunch actually at Uka's restaurant, which is a Rastafarian culture center that came recommended. It's actually a vegan restaurant. So a bit of a change up from the seafood and the barbecue that we had previously been eating. And there we had the callaloo and fungi. Callaloo is sort of the green leafy dish, which varies depending on seasonality in the Caribbean. So it can be taro, can be amaranth, similar to almost like collard greens.
Yeah.
And with the fungi, which is that paella dish that we mentioned previously. And they had breadfruit juice on top. They were doing some tofu grilling, and that was actually a really, really, really awesome lunch spot.
Got it.
The other main attraction in Frederiksted is Fort Frederiksted. So this is the fort that is on the west side of the island. Again, Danish in style, a good opportunity to explore sort of the history of the island.
Okay.
And that was day 5 for us. So we did quite a bit of snorkeling that day. So we went back to the Airbnb early and sort of crashed. But again, the theme here is that we spent pretty much all of our time outside snorkeling in the water. So that is our biggest recommendation when it comes to, we have a lot of friends that like to do snorkeling, diving, that kind of thing. And so they're always asking us about our experience with St. Croix. On the 6th day, we explored Sandy Point National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay.
So that is in the west, southwest corner of the island and is supposedly where final scene of Shawshank Redemption was filmed.
Oh, okay.
When they're running along the beach reunited and they're so excited to be together again. Hmm. That was to be filmed.
That's their claim to fame.
On Sandy Point National Wildlife Refuge.
It's a beautiful park. The sand there is very unique. It's quite soft. You'll sink in several inches with every step you take. It's a very different type of sand, type of beach.
The way it falls, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got, on the very tip of it, the currents that are meeting. One is coming west and one is coming south. It creates this almost sort of wall of waves that are constantly running into each other. But supposed to be less of a snorkeling beach, more of what they call a floating beach, they refer to it as, where you just go in the water and just hang out in that beautiful teal.
Beautiful aqua. Caribbean.
Aqua agua.
Yes, yes.
Spend all day there in that water. And again, we went early enough. I mean, the park opened at 10, so it's not like we were there that early. But we had the beach to ourselves for about an hour.
Yep. And then a couple of fishermen came out.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of fishing there. Another really neat thing about St. Croix, so they offer lionfish spear fishing, if that's
hunting
something.
Trips.
Yes, lionfish hunting trips.
Okay.
Where you have the opportunity to hunt for lionfish.
Which is an invasive species, so they're trying to encourage people to eat them.
Exactly. And they have some lionfish recipe books on the island. Which is
okay.
Something you don't see everywhere. But one of the folks we ran into said that they're quite a large issue, quite a big problem on the island there. And they've actually, fun little side fact, have been seen as far north as New Jersey, in case you were wondering. When
and
it comes to...
Where we would also encourage people to eat them.
So after the Sandy Point National Wildlife Refuge, which is also a really great place to birdwatch, there's a couple ponds there, if you will, freshwater ponds that host various birds throughout the year. So if you're a bird watcher, that's a really cool spot. And then we made our way north on the western end of the island to Dorch Beach, which is known for its Chaney, so C-H-A-N-E-Y, which is the term given to pottery, old pottery. So similar to sea glass.
Okay.
Where it's been processed over the years through the sand and over the rocks, and it comes up like this buffed little piece of glass, colored glass. The big thing in St. Croix on the west side is the Chaney, which is old pieces of pottery that have essentially been caught along the beach over the years. And people go around and collect jewelry and mosaics and all that stuff. So you go with the intention of hopefully finding a piece of Chaney that you can take home with you.
That is a new one on me. Okay.
From Dorch Beach, we went up to, we got a recommendation, actually multiple recommendations from people that we came across to go check out the beer drinking pig.
Okay.
So there's a place called the Domino Club, and they host Sunday Fun Day. So on the island, Sundays are no work.
Okay.
Specifically Sunday Fun Day. So the Domino Club is a bar that, again, has a type of mamawana, and their attraction is a beer drinking pig. So you can buy non-alcoholic beers and take them up to the pig, and the pig will destroy the beer, the can, and drink the beer.
Basically takes the entire, I mean, it's a large pig. We're not talking little potbelly pigs. These are those very large, sort of almost meat pigs, I guess, but they're not eaten. They're pets, and they will crush cans of non-alcoholic beer and consume them. Yes. I believe the history is they used to be alcoholic, but then somebody piped up and they became non-alcoholic beers. So
got it.
Somebody was concerned for the safety of the pig, which I appreciate. Health and safety of the pig.
So this is also the place where we found our favorite mamawana.
Okay.
The lady that makes it, her name is Norma, and they sell bottles at the bar that you can buy and take home with you, of which, of course, we did. I think there might be a couple drinks left. A
couple shots left of it.
We've very sparingly stretched it out as long as we possibly can. Again, that was our favorite mamawana by far.
Got it.
And a fun souvenir.
So then from the Domino Club, unfortunately, it was raining that day, so we did not get to feed the pig any beers.
He goes away in the rain.
Yeah.
Goes in the hiding.
So from the Domino Club, we went out to Rainbow Beach. And this is a unique spot because, well, it's on the water, the restaurant that we went to, it's on the water. But as the sun went down, the streetlights came on. And like we were talking about St. Croix being very environmentally friendly for the turtles, all the streetlights on the west and northwest end of the island are all replaced during nest season with red lights.
Okay.
As to not to draw the turtles away from the water.
Right.
And that's something that we've never seen anywhere in any of our travels that we thought was very unique.
Yeah, I've seen places that turn off the lights during turtle nesting seasons, like Gulf Shores, Alabama, is one of the places I can think of, but I hadn't seen red lights.
Yeah, it was a really neat way to sort of keep the lights active for people, obviously, that were using the roads, but minimizing the impact on the wildlife. And then we went to Rhythms Restaurant and Bar, and that was another live entertainment venue with waterfront, and you can watch the sunset. That's on the west side, on the very west end of the island there, so...
Okay.
So that was day six. And then on day seven, we had actually originally planned to go to Buck Island. When we made our calls on day six, we were shot down due to lack of demand for a tour.
Okay.
We were the only ones that wanted to go to Buck Island that day.
So there are faults, downsides to being there in the colder season when there aren't a lot of tourists around. A lot of visitors.
I have been to Buck Island, so that's the one place that I can help with. We're talking about the Buck Island Reef National Monument is by Buck Island. It's a national park with an underwater nature trail. For instance, I've done the underwater nature trail. I haven't been on the island itself, I think, but I was there with the Windjammer Legacy sailing vessel back when the Windjammer ships, sailing ships, were touring the Caribbean way back 20 years ago, at least a little more than 20 years ago, but a very interesting place and obviously a rich ecosystem, which is one of the reasons why they made that portions of that national park are underwater.
Yeah. And it's one of the beaches, I believe it's called Turtle Beach, is supposedly on the National Geographic list of top beaches in the world.
There aren't a lot of beaches on the island. There's beaches on the kind of west end of the island and not a lot on the rest of the island.
So I guess that would be why that specific beach is popular. So yeah, so we were a little disappointed that we didn't end up making it out, but one of our sort of travel mottos is we'll do it next time because we always plan to come back. So we ended up, instead of doing Buck Island, we traveled around the island again, tried to pick up on some of the spots we hadn't quite ventured to yet. So one of them being the Christopher Columbus Landing Beach on the north side of the island.
Okay. I didn't realize that he had landed in St. Croix.
He was the one that named the island in 1943.
Okay. 1943.
I'm sorry, 1493.
14, yes.
He landed in the Salt River region and named the island Santa Cruz, which, as you mentioned previously, is Holy Cross. Ultimately ended up as St. Croix. So,
got it.
Christopher Columbus did land on the island. It was very seaweed covered beach. I imagine it looked very much like it did when he landed on it. So that's kind of neat. Little trip back in time. And then we wandered to one of the natural features on the island, which is a baobab tree. It's actually the oldest one of its kind. So it's a South African tree, but this particular one, geez, was it 10 meters in diameter? Huge, huge, huge tree that originated from South Africa over 250 years ago. So it's a really old growth tree, really known for sort of their longevity over 2,000 years they can live up to. So just kind of another unique feature, and it's near the botanical gardens. Unfortunately, weren't open the day that we went or at the time that we went, but we got to see the baobab tree in lieu. And then we made our way back to the West Coast to explore Estate Mount Washington, which is, or used to be rather, a 160-acre sugar plantation. Now it's only a 12-acre piece of land with natural residents on it that's gone up for sale multiple times, I believe, in the last decade alone. But just a really neat opportunity to walk a plantation and see sort of the old buildings, see the abandoned, depreciated sugar mill that they used to run with having the horse or the mule walk around and grind sugar down. And you can see where the liquids were flowing that they were using or extracting for the rum. So it was a really interesting way to sort of take in the history in a more direct manner. And it's a farm as well. So there's like avocado trees, different tropical plants that you can see while you're on the property. And the other unique feature of this particular property is the Chartres style labyrinth. So for anyone who's familiar with labyrinths, they're definitely something I gravitate to when we're traveling. If we find one in our travels, I like to walk them. Labyrinths, of course, were designed for thousands of years ago, essentially for prayer and meditation. So it's sort of a spiral. It's a guided spiral. It doesn't look like it makes much sense, but once you walk it.
It looks like a maze, but it's not. It's
exactly.
Yeah, there's one path through.
Exactly. And I think that's where people get sort of confused with labyrinths and mazes. It's they're actually very different. Anyway, there's a labyrinth there that you can explore, which is a really, again, unique feature to find on the island. We got back on the road, continued to make our way to the northwest corner of the island, where we found a blowhole, a natural blowhole, which...
Again, just a rock overcropping where the seas come up with force underneath.
Mm-hmm.
They've just eroded a spot in the top of the rock. As the waves crash, it shoots up and blows out, and it looks pretty cool. Just driving down the side of the road, and all of a sudden you see this water shoot up into the air. Mm-hmm.
A wave-powered geyser.
Yeah.
We made an effort to go up to Ham Bluff. So there's a lighthouse on the top of the hill in the northwest corner of the island.
Supposedly a pretty good height, but again, the signage for driving and directions on the island is... We'll just say poor.
Will cause a struggle. Yes. You get disoriented at any point if you're looking for a specific road. If you weren't paying attention and you drive past the one road on the map that was highlighted, you risk then completely losing your way. And ultimately, we weren't able to find the path that went up to the lighthouse, so we had to skip that one. But we'll try again next time.
Yeah. And we found a blowhole in the process.
And then we ended up wrapping up that day actually at Leatherback Brewery. So this is one of the other adult beverage locations that we would recommend. So Leatherback, name based off of one of the sea turtle species. And they have a couple of flagship beers and then some seasonal beers on rotation on tap. So all made right there. It's actually a stone's throw from the airport. So you could go right there after landing or just prior to taking off. But with the sort of natural appreciation of the islands and the communities with the ecotourism, they offer their... six packs or four packs. Anyways, the piece that holds the six packs, four packs together is made out of biodegradable materials, which I really appreciate and I wish was more widely spread. But wasn't those plastic six rings that you see everywhere at the grocery stores. They actually had a biodegradable version of it. So that was kind of neat.
No, it was edible. Turtle edible.
That's what it was.
Sorry.
Well, that makes it biodegradable. Doesn't mean that cat was wrong. It's just more specific.
Yeah.
A little more specific.
Yeah.
Excellent.
As marine scientists, we really appreciated the vibe of just like general appreciation for nature and preservation and conservancy, and that everyone sort of accepted it as part of the life on the island. So
very cool.
So that was the end of day 7. And then day 8, we had to fly home, very sadly.
Yeah. Woke up and we stopped at the Cruisin' Rum Distillery right by the airport.
Yeah, it is. Again, quite a few locations right near the airport there. So once you get off, there's no shortage of food and drink by any means if you're eager to get started or if you want to sort of wrap up your trip nicely. We stopped at Lorraine Chicken Shack again to grab a bite on our way to the airport and then visited the Cruisin' Rum Distillery. So again, more historic rum distilleries on the islands with over, I think it's 24 types or flavors of rum now that they have there. So you get a tour, you get to see all the stills and the processes, the old plantation from where the Cruisin' family originally started the rum distillery. And that was a really good opportunity to just kind of chill before our flight because it's nice to not have to be super stressed out. The airport itself was really easy, incredibly easy to get in and out of. One of those small ones that you walk in and you're surprised that you basically walk off the plane straight to your rental car. Barely any...
Again, open air.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all open air. They will, when you're returning flight-wise, they do thoroughly check all the luggage for any type of agricultural or making sure that you're not bringing back any palm leaves, anything that might cause you to bring back any infectious diseases or parasites. But you are entitled to, I believe it's 6 bottles of rum of the 750 liter.
Without any extra duty.
Huh.
So what you'll find when you visit some of the distilleries, Cruisin' and Captain Morgan, that they have like 6-pack boxes for your bottles of rum to be able to take back with you, packed for the plane, because they know that that's something. They're decently priced. It is U.S. dollars on St. Croix.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to mention that earlier. no special vaccination requirements as far as yellow fever, malaria, well, not malaria, but any of the typhoid fever, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else we want to cover in terms of itinerary before we wrap this up? It's current longer than average length.
I believe that we covered it quite thoroughly.
A couple wrap-up questions. You were standing in the prettiest spot in St. Croix. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
We each have one.
Okay.
My favorite spot was Point Oodle, sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Perhaps the first sunrise in the U.S.
We'll have to do some more research on that. And mine, Chris, was actually from our Airbnb. I think it was one of the best. It's a little biased, but one of the best vantage points for sure. You could see Buck Island, like I said, off in the distance, or St. Thomas and St. John, if the visibility was really good. That was a really great spot. We do have on our blog a link to the Airbnb that we stayed at, because we do highly recommend it. So,
well, and we'll get to your blog in just a second. But first, one thing that makes you laugh and say only in St. Croix.
Oh, you stumped us.
I ask it every week.
I mean, rum. I know rum isn't only, it's a Caribbean thing, but I don't think I've ever had so much exposure to rum on any other island.
Okay.
Or in a vacation. Yeah.
On a vacation. Yes. Yes. It was very much a theme of the vacation. Yeah.
And if you had to summarize St. Croix in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
Tropical.
Mm-hmm.
Very chill.
Okay.
Chill.
Vibe.
Yeah. Tropical chill vibes.
Excellent. And then speaking of staying afloat, blog.com. If we wanted to send people to the best post that you've got on St. Croix there, where are we going to send them?
Best place to start would be our 8-day St. Croix USVI itinerary post.
Which might have something to do with this episode.
It might. And then from there, we actually have it broken down. We've broken down every single day in more detail. It's a very broad overview, so set up so that you can easily link to any of the things that we talked about today.
Excellent. Our guests again have been Kat Roy and Phil Shantz. And Kat and Phil, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for St. Croix.
Thank you, Chris, for having us.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
It's great chatting with you.
I want to extend my thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. And a special thanks to April Grippo, who became our most recent patron. If you're interested in supporting Amateur Traveler, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler and learn more. We're over the hour mark, so I think we'll wrap this show up. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.